If the name Coates is known to you, it's most probably because you've seen it on cotton reels. And indeed, the founder of that firm is the great-great-grandfather of the man we're to hear from now. He's John Coates, world president of the Theosophical Society, who's currently on a lecture tour of New Zealand. L. Pike spoke to him last week and asked what led him into theosophy.
I think that for many years in my youth, I was looking for something without quite knowing what I was looking for. And I participated in the activities of a number of churches, and I was interested at that time in looking into spiritualism. I also worked for the model rearmament people, and so on. And then, to cut a long story short, I lived for some years of my life in Vienna, in Austria, and I was in a cafe one day, reading my newspaper from England, when a man came and sat down on the other side of the table. And he started to talk to me about all sorts of things. And finally he asked me if I'd ever heard of theosophy, and I said, no, I hadn't. What is that? And he started to explain, and according to his lights, of course, and I think that really changed my life altogether.
You have come to New Zealand to lecture on theosophy and to encourage the development of theosophy in New Zealand. New Zealand is basically, could be termed, a Christian country. Are theosophy and Christianity compatible?
Yes and no. I say no, first of all, because I think that it would be difficult to be a real theosophist, just to say a deep student of comparative religion, which is one of the aims we lay before our members, and remain a dogmatic Christian in a narrow sense. But I think that practically every Christian member of our society, and we have membership, of course, from all religions, would say with me that we had learnt more about Christianity, in fact, through our studies of theosophy than we had known before.
Are there any aspects of Christianity that do not fit in with the theosophical belief?
Well, as I say, the dogmatic acceptance of certain theosophical ideas which are generally held would not fit in a literal sense. The theosophical approach would be more concerned with the symbolic meaning, with the deeper meaning as you can find if you explore various religious themes and stories. So that I think that, for instance, the idea of the Christ to a theosophist is not only, or not in the first place, a great individual who lived 2,000 years ago, but more than that, in the sense that he is symbolic of the totality of the life, the love, the light of the universe.
In what you've said, though, I take it theosophists would not believe, for example, that Jesus Christ was the Son of God.
Not the Son of God, in the sense the only Son. But again, I would have to explain. He is the only Son because he represents the life of the universe, or the love of the universe, if you like. And there is only one life in the universe, and that is him. Although in other religions they may call him by other names. For instance, the Hindu seeks to be one with Brahman, which is the life of the universe. The Christian becomes one with Christ. That's the way we see it. But he's not the only Son in the sense that because we're all sons of God, if you see what I mean. And we're all gods in the becoming, in that sense also, you see. But if we participate, and we also grow and follow, and do the right kind of things, we arrive at the same place. And that is to say, part of the oneness of the universe, which is the Son of God.
The philosophy of theosophy does seem to embrace many and varied beliefs and philosophies, from occultism, well, which I understand you are speaking during your tour, to atheism, to Christianity, to Buddhism, and many others. Is it everything to all men?
The Theosophical Society is open to everyone. We have no holds barred, so to speak, in our membership, and we have membership drawn from every quarter, including atheists or agnostics and people of all faiths. Theosophy itself, however, is not so negative. What I mean is that it is a positive doctrine to which people come to adhere, but not in a dogmatic sense. It is presented to people for their response or their reaction. Now, we have, therefore, within our membership, people from all these different backgrounds that you mentioned, and theosophy tries to show that all religions and all philosophies have arisen basically from the same, what should I call it, ageless, universal religion, which has been available in the world from the beginning of time. It is not particularly more one thing than another. I mean, it would be a mistake to say it was not Christian or that it was only Hindu or something of that sort, because it contains enough within it to show its connection, its relationship to all the great faiths and teachings of the world. The trouble is, you know, with the vast number of people is that they never really study their religion. If you do look into comparative religion, you find an immense richness everywhere, but hardly anyone ever does it. So it puts one, when one is a student, it puts one in the position of being peculiar or having strange ideas or something like that, which is what one is accused of. But it isn't really peculiar. It's only that if you study, you find. Jesus said, if you seek, you find, and it's true. You do. But the most people never see.
World President of the Theosophical Society, John Coates. And now for news of the British religious scene, Alan Tristram.
Philosophy and science. We asked Mr. Coates whether this was it in a nutshell.
Yes, it does. Of course, you could add a lot to that. First of all, can I say that the Society has existed for over 100 years, which is unusual in any organization of this sort. Its three objectives are to form a nucleus of brotherhood without any distinctions. And when it was founded, you see, 100 years ago, the idea of such a brotherhood was very peculiar. So it was very new on the colonial scene, for instance. Also promoting understanding between the great religions of the world, which so often keep people apart. So we encourage the comparative study of religion so that by knowing a little more about what the other man believes or thinks, you can break down barriers and build bridges and so on towards other people and so create a feeling of brotherhood and friendliness all over the world. We've also done some work with races and so on to try and break down those barriers. So that's one of our objectives. Then we have a third objective, which is more in the field of investigation. For instance, the various laws of the universe, which are perhaps not fully understood or even recognized, and the various means whereby an individual can develop himself. It takes us into the field of yoga, for instance, and meditation.
So you're not tied in or particularly concerned with one belief as such?
No. Basically, I would say there are three ideas which all students and all of our membership are students, really, that we are supposed always to remember. One is the idea that of oneness, of wholeness, that the universe is one entire, complete whole, and that everything within it, from the top to the bottom, whether we're thinking of spirit or matter or consciousness, everything is related to everything else. And therefore, everything has a responsibility to everything else. And that is why our first object is to do with the brotherhood of man, because this is the manifestation at this level of that oneness which is at the center of everything. The second one is that law is universal and that everything, everywhere, is subject to law, sometimes laws we don't know. And thirdly, that every individual can find his way home. I mean, if you look into the word religion, it comes from Latin, meaning religare, meaning to bind back. So everybody is, by religion, supposed to be bound back to his source. And we feel that everyone, if he takes the trouble, explores the scene, enters into certain disciplines and practices, can find his way back. Not only
intellectually speaking, but by inner realization of his oneness with that life of the universe, shall I call it, or God, if you like.
What sort of people can belong to the Theosophical Society? Do they have to be Christians?
No, anyone can belong. We have just as many Hindu members, probably, or very nearly as many Hindu members as we have Christians. We have many Buddhist members, many Muslim members, Parsis, and so on. What? I think there's a tremendous search at the moment all over the world, especially amongst the younger people, for a meaning in life. I think that dogmatic religions all over the place have been wasting their time because they have not really satisfied the seeking of so many people today. People don't want to be told what they have to believe. They want to seek for themselves and explore many fields before they decide for themselves. Now, I live in India, and we get really streams, I might say, of young people, boys and girls, mostly in their 20s, shall we say, with their house on their back, and they're walking through India, going from ashram to ashram and teacher to teacher, looking for some deeper meaning in life, which they're not getting in their own countries. They come from this country, perhaps more from Australia, which of course is a larger country, and chiefly from the United States and Canada. A lot of Europeans also. But we have masses of these young people coming through our international compound, which is in Madras, all year. They're looking, you see, for something they're not finding at home.
Your brochure says a common search and aspiration for truth. Mm. Is there just one truth?
Well, yes, there is only one truth that's true. But it isn't something you can put into words. It is the oneness that I'm thinking of. That's all there is.
It would suggest that if we say there is only one truth, well, obviously there should be only one truth, but it would suggest that people have to conform to the required needs of following that one truth. And yet, of course, races differ in their cultural ways all around the world.
I think it's just like the mountain has one peak at the very top. But you can say there are many ways.
Yeah.
The higher you go up, the fewer the ways. Until perhaps at the very end, there's only one way. But they all lead in the same direction, basically. So that in all religions, no matter where you're born in the world, you can find your way towards truth. The only thing, as I said before, is that some religions rather help you, and other religions don't really help you. They kind of tell you so many rules and regulations that you must believe. I'm not talking about practice, but believing that somehow or other one is prevented from going beyond a certain point. I think that it is necessary, probably, for deep inner understanding of things to have certain disciplines in your life. I think the practice of meditation, which is growing throughout the world, especially nowadays in the Western world, requires certain disciplines. That is to say that you are quiet and that you meet or sit at the same time every day. You get into a certain pattern, a certain cycle, as it were. And I think the disciplines that go with that, which are partly to do with your attitude to life, and here again, you can go to Christianity, of course, because Christians are taught to lead a certain kind of life. I'm not at all sure that all Christians need that life, but they have the possibility of it in the teaching of Jesus. And in the other great religions, they also perhaps go into it even more deeply.
You seem to be rather concerned about certain religions with their dogma. Are there any particular religions that you feel are inhibiting the search for truth because of their dogma?
I think that certain religions do. I think that in the West we suffered from it too much in Christianity. I think even in India, Hinduism is often fraught with dogmas and superstitions and so on, which are detrimental perhaps to the search for truth. Buddhism has very much fewer. It's a much freer thing, perhaps more a philosophy than a religion. The Islamic faith is also very tight. People are kept very close to what they're supposed to think and do and feel and say. I should think that there is hardly a religion, possibly with the exception of Buddhism, which is not in need of some change and opening out.
You talked about finding your own path up to the top of the mountain. Have you found your particular path, or are you still considering all of them, or some of them?
Well, I think that in what I do and believe in and work for, I have found my path for the time being, at any rate. I don't want to be dogmatic about it. I really believe, and I must do, as I'm the president of the Theosophical Society, I must really believe that theosophy has something to give. It is sometimes called the ageless wisdom. And I think it's something which is not at all new, which has been available to the seekers for truth down through the ages in one form or another. And I really believe it holds something for nearly everyone. But I'm not going to dogmatize about it. I think that is a useless thing to do. It only puts people off.
Is it an end in itself, though, or not?
No, I think it's a means. I think the only end is the one, with a capital O, if you like. And that is the only goal that is worth seeking, and the only goal that anyone has to seek for, whether they know it or not.
Do you think today that people are very confused in their religious beliefs?
Yes, I think they are becoming rather confused.
More so than they perhaps once were?
Well, if I go back, and I can go back quite a number of years, think about my grandparents and so on, they were perfectly content in their particular beliefs. I was brought up in Scotland amongst Presbyterians, and I loved them dearly, and they were very nice people, but religiously speaking, they were very narrow in their beliefs, really. I think they would have been horrified at the sort of things I accept today, in terms of the brotherhood of faith, for instance. They wouldn't have countenanced that for a moment. They would have thought everybody else was a heathen.
What would you like to see developing in religious evolution, if you like? But would you like to see eventually one common church? We talk a lot about interdenominational churches these days.
No, I think that all religions have a part to play. I don't want to see them all merged into one, but I would like to see what I would call a philosophy of wholeness all over the world, which stresses the wholeness principle as being more important than the parts. The part can never be greater than the whole of which it is part. I mean, no race is more important than humanity. No religion is more important than truth. No nation is more important than the world. And we need a philosophy of wholeness which puts the world first, or the truth first, or the or humanity first, not the part. Do you understand what I mean? Now, that could be universal and would be invaluable for children growing up, because many children today grow up in certain religious backgrounds where they are told that they're better than everybody else. And in 1978, we can't afford to bring up our children as religious snobs, thinking they're better than anyone else.
I understand the idealism, but can it become a reality, really?
Yes, it can, as an idea of the wholeness of things develops, and it is developing. I think the picture of the blue world, a sort of little pea in space that the American astronauts gave us, has been an enormous asset in that direction. Because I think thinking people must have looked at it and said to themselves, well, that's what I am. I'm on that. It's a limited, maybe large, but it is a limited little planet. And we're all on it, and we're all responsible for it. And I think the idea of that wholeness, which is related to the idea of the Earth and the planet and so on, is growing. People are more concerned today about world problems, I think, than they used to be.
There are, of course, many, many people, perhaps more than there used to be, I don't actually know, who perhaps reject religious belief, who opt for non-belief or a materialistic belief. How do these people fit into your idealism?
Well, they all have their part to play, I suppose. I mean, we stand for a brotherhood without distinctions. So, I mean, if we have members of our society who are atheists or agnostics, we welcome them just the same. The only thing we really ask of them is that they do have some kind of a conception of the universal brotherhood of all people and accept that as a background to the way they want to live.